Welcome to TCJ Talkies, the internet's only podcast hosted at the Comics Journal. Aside from the other podcast hosted at the Comics Journal, Comic Book Decalogue, which shares an RSS feed with me. So our podcasts both show up in the same TCJ Talkies category on iTunes, which is probably annoying for Greg Hunter. I don't mind it because it makes it seem like the podcast is producing episodes with greater frequency. Plus, I enjoy his show. But anyway, this is the TCJ Talkies podcast, and that is the one hosted by me, Mike Dawson. And this is the podcast where cartoonists come on to discuss books that we've both read. It's like a book club. You can follow me on Twitter, Mike_Dawes, and visit my website, MikeDawsonComics.com, see my work, hear my news, find out about me. But anyway, this week I am pleased to welcome to the Talkie Hut my old podcasting friend and colleague, Alex Robinson. Longtime listeners might know that Alex and I hosted a different comics-ish podcast called The Ink Panther Show for almost 5 years. Alex now hosts the popular Star Wars Minute podcast and the Alphabetical program. He's the author of the graphic novels Box Office Poison, Tricked, Too Cool to Be Forgotten, and most recently Our Expanding Universe, which was all published by Top Shelf. We're going to be discussing the Marvel Comics collection Warlock by Jim Starlin. This is a comic that was originally published in 1975, 1976, and appeared in a number of different titles, including Strange Tales, Marvel 2-in-1 Annual, an Avengers Annual, and I think issues 9 through 15 of the standalone Warlock series. This stuff is all collected up into a semi-coherent book about the character Warlock. So let's get straight to the conversation.
Is this Mike Dawson?
It is. Ready to get talking?
Let's do it.
Ready to TCJ talk?
Yes.
Good. Well, that's good. Welcome. Welcome, Alex. I'm glad to have a chat with you. You have a new book out.
Oh, we're getting right to it, huh?
Yeah.
Yes, I do. My new book, my new graphic novel is called Our Expanding Universe.
Are you excited?
I am excited. I finished the book like a year ago, so I keep forgetting that it like hasn't come out yet. I just assumed that it had come out and been a total disaster and bombed and no one talked about it.
Okay. I'm looking forward to reading it. I feel like this is the first time where I'm going to be reading a book where probably parts of it I'm going to make me feel uncomfortable. Like, because they have to do with me and you and our friendship, I think.
Yeah, it's funny. I guess it's just kind of like when you're friends with someone who writes stories about real life people, you kind of like, it's almost like you have to sign a waiver. Like, just so you know, any of this could wind up as future fodder for a book. So, interestingly, I don't think I've ever been a character in someone else's book. I don't know what that means, but I've never recognized something in one of my friend's books and been like, oh my God, that's me. I guess that's good.
I've read parts of the book, so that's yeah. That's why I'm not actually being narcissistic and just assuming it's a bad
yeah.
thing. I read enough of it to know, you know, I could see like parts of like your friendship with me, and you know, we were friends with Chris Radke and you know, and Tony Consiglio. I'm assuming like aspects of that like have all have to do with, you know, like
yeah, well, not to be cagey, but I mean, like basically, you know, there was like a group of friends of ours, and various factors have, you know, have an impact on relationships, and that's kind of what I wanted to look at.
I'm very excited to see how it ends.
We'll see.
Will it end with everyone becoming we're friends forever?
I'm glad we're recording this prior to reading the ending. Let's put it that way.
Oh really? Oh no! That's got me feeling terrible. My stomach's sinking.
Right. Well, it's funny because I think part of the I think part of the reason I did this book, I think also part of it was me sort of just like I don't know, like dealing with this stuff, and also just kind of like all right, well, so everyone I know had kids, and my wife and I do not have kids, and I felt to some extent, you know, like what's it like being people without kids in a world where everyone has kids? And it's very tempting to be like, oh, I'm really going to stick it to parents. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, they're so dumb. But but as you know, when you're working on a graphic novel over a long period of time, you almost can't help but like I don't know. I felt like it helped me come around and sort of understand, because I had to write characters who were parents. I had to sort of put myself in those shoes, and it made me more at least understand, not understand what it was to be a parent, but at least to
or try to find that empathy.
Yeah, exactly. Try to see things from their point of view. So, wow.
My son, this will make you feel good. My son just took a dump on the floor about an hour ago. That's a big old log, though.
Right.
So that's the kind of thing you're missing out on.
But I guess that's the kind of thing that makes the good moments. All the, you know, that's the stuff you put up with for the good things. Like, Daddy, I love you, and you know,
and like you went behind the couch. And said, why is he so quiet back there? He goes, don't look at me. Don't see me.
Yeah, exactly.
It was actually a good moment. I have to say, like, you'd think that that would be one of the bad moments, like in a sitcom, that would be the part where you'd be like, oh, you know, I can't stand it, but, you know, my daughter was laughing, everyone was screaming. That's, you know.
No, and also you kind of know that this is theoretically a phase. You know this is not going to be for the rest of his life.
Oh, no, he's 17. Didn't I mention that? He's 17 years old. Oh. No, it was a revenge thing. I wouldn't let him borrow the car. He took a shit on the floor.
Yeah, so that's exactly the kind of charming story you see. I wish I had known that prior to doing the book. That would have been a great
detail. You could put that in there?
Yeah.
Kids do the darndest things.
Kids poop the darndest places.
And so I guess the other aspect of this, how do you feel about re-entering the world of comics? You mean, not that you've left comics, but like the whole industry thing, like going to shows and all that. You've not been doing it for quite a while, right?
No, my last proper graphic novel that I sort of toured to promote and everything was 2008, so it's been a long time. I feel like I've totally, like, the whole entire ground has shifted under my feet, and I don't know what's going on anymore.
That's probably true.
So, and conversely, I think, I feel like I'm kind of, in a way, not quite starting over. You know, I have a book being published, and I'm not like, oh, poor me, but I feel like there's a whole generation of cartoonists who don't know who I am, so nothing but potential out there.
Yeah,
but you know, between webcomics, I feel like that's a whole thing now that wasn't back when I was last at this. So it's both exciting and weird. I feel very disconnected from it all.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about comic conventions anymore, because I kind of stopped doing them a couple mm-hmm. years, and I felt I put all my energies into like the internet.
Yeah,
and I don't know.
Well, that seems to be paying off for you, though.
Well, that's the thing. It doesn't cost. There's no table fee for the internet. Right. You know, and there's no traveling. So like,
right.
It's not so great in the social sense. Then you know, there's no after parties and things like
and you're
that.
You're also competing with a lot more people because
yeah, I guess
on the internet you're competing with all the noise out there on the internet. You got your clickbait and your pornography and your YouTube videos, all that stuff. Whereas at a show, it's kind of a captive audience. A certain number of people are going to walk by your table and possibly be, you know, wrangled in, but
yeah,
as you said,
right. The yeah. internet is larger than SPX.
Yeah, the internet is like
even,
the big.
Even
the,
now that they do two rooms for SPX, they've opened up the big ballroom.
Yeah,
internet is bigger. So
the internet is like SPX, like quadrupled.
Well, there's another thing. I haven't fleshed this out yet. This mm-hmm. thought, but I was thinking, mm-hmm. I you know, I was whining about a year ago about not having an audience to read.
Oh,
comments.
Famously, you really
famously whined.
You were like the Sheila Booth. Everyone was ganging up on you and wanted to kick you down a peg.
This is the thing I learned as a person who's a writer. I think it's a little something that like I kind of wanted that I saw in the 90s in terms of an audience. Mm-hmm. You sort of want this feeling that, you know, like the all of comics is like paying attention to the work you do.
Yeah.
And I sort of realized in the last year or so that you can find an audience, but it doesn't mean you have all the audience. You know,
right.
That you are probably the best you're going to do is to find, like, and it's actually a very good thing to be able to even do this, is to find a, you know, relatively healthy group of people who are interested in your work. But you're never going to have, like, I mean, some people might, but even, like, the big shots, I don't think have it anymore, like, where, like, all of comics focuses on what they do, you know? Like, it's a...
Yeah, it's like everything is increasingly fragmented. I mean, you think even a guy like Peter Bagg, who's been doing this for a long time, like his books come out with like very little hype, and you know, like there's very few people who, when a new book comes out, everyone's like, oh boy, you know, maybe like Chris Ware and maybe Dan Clowes. Like, I can't think of anyone else who kind of, and even them, do they still get? I don't know what to judge anything by. Like it used to be, you were cool if you were on the cover of the Comics Journal, but now there's no kind of like arbiter of that kind of stuff. It's really, oh wow, I made the front page of Reddit. Like, how, I don't even know if that's a real thing. Is that a real thing you would say?
This doesn't feel the same getting interviewed for the Comics Journal podcast. It doesn't, feel like being on the cover of the Comics Journal in 1996.
That's what's funny is by the time I got interviewed by the Comics Journal, like print publication, it was already kind of winding down. So I never got to fulfill my dream of having a Comics Journal cover article. Oh well.
It's one of those things. Like, I'm still holding out that will happen. Even though I'm technically putting stuff up on the Comics Journal on a regular basis, I'm like, I hope one day to, you know, to get to draw the cover, and I hope I do make it into one of those Young Cartoonist issues.
Well, now you're going to be in the doughy middle-aged cartoonist, the bloated field of doughy middle-aged cartoonists.
Yes, that's quite a healthy, I guess quite a few people there. We're here to talk about a book, which I guess we should get to a little bit, right?
If you want to.
Because you chose the Marvel Comics collection Warlock by Jim Starlin.
I did.
Now, why did you choose that? Also, while you're saying why you chose it, maybe also explain what it is a bit.
Warlock is a collection of comics done in the 70s by Jim Starlin. It's, I guess, superheroes, but it's more kind of like space adventures. You know, it's not like he goes around stopping bank robberies. He goes to other dimensions and fights future versions of himself and has like crazy, you know, trippy adventures and stuff. And I've been getting into more.
Like, so did you read this recently, or is this something you read as a child?
No, I did not read it probably until like last year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm like, Alex must have definitely loved this as a child.
Well, it was before my time, right? I wasn't reading superhero comics. I'm old, but I'm not that old.
It's 1977, right, is when it was coming out.
That could be true. Yeah, so I was like under 10 years old, and this stuff is like, it barely makes sense as an adult. I can't imagine it. I think that's what I love about it, is that it's just so, you know, you read that Marvel Comics, The Untold Story, that I think it's by Sean Howe.
Yeah.
And the 70s Marvel seems such a weird time to me. It's almost like as close as they got to doing like underground comics, where you had everything filtered through superheroes or that the Marvel Universe, but it was like crazy weird stuff like Howard the Duck and Man-Thing and Warlock, these kind of very idiosyncratic Marvel comics that you have to wonder, like, how on earth did this possibly get through?
It's like some of this stuff, like you mentioned Howard the Duck. I read that, Sean Howe. Yeah, it's like the Untold Story of Marvel Comics, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Howard the Duck, not only was it like it was this weird idiosyncratic comic that was getting put out by Marvel in the 70s, it was like their most popular character like for a period of time, according to this book, which is unfathomable to me. You know, that like people were, you know, that Howard the Duck would be like, you know, the Wolverine of the day. Am I wrong in that? Am I misremembering?
Well, it was almost more like if... I think it was almost like the people who grew up reading Spider-Man wanted to take comics farther. And so like Howard the Duck was kind of like, almost like a not quite underground, but I don't know. It had a point of view. I feel like it was aimed more at adults than it was at
teenagers. The kids who were kids in the 60s, like during the first boom of Marvel comics.
Yeah.
They get to become like late teens and 20-somethings. They're all stoned. It's the 70s.
Yeah.
And like they're all into Man-Thing and, you know, these like... And Howard the Duck, because they're... Are they, and Warlock, I guess, too. Where, like, it's all... I mean, Warlock's like all this like trippy... Right? Like kind of...
Yeah, I mean, the major first storyline, like I said, is a guy, he's fighting a villain with a crazy, like, white electric afro, and then it's revealed that this guy with the white electric afro is, like, him from the future after having gained cosmic powers. So he has, Thanos is a character, and that's what's weird, that has these guys in muscle-bound tights and stuff fighting each other, and it's just such a strange, probably as weird as Marvel Comics could get, conceivably. I mean,
I do love the character design of the Magus, which is the Adam Warlock of the future with his big sort of, you know, I guess Art Garfunkel looking kind of.
yeah, exactly.
Like Afro. You know, with his purple leotard and his big.
Yeah, and I think, like, you know, Jim Starlin wrote and drew this whole thing, and he's definitely a man with a vision. I mean, you know.
Do you know much about, like, did he create these characters? A little bit of trouble I was having with the book was that it is definitely of its time, and that these are, you know, these were not written, I think, 100% with, like, being a collected story one day in mind, like, you know.
Yeah, it definitely, you know, it starts off with, it's not every story of Warlock. It's almost like if, you know, like, you took over writing the Fantastic Four, and then it was collected of just your issues. So it's, you know, it doesn't do the whole origin of Warlock and everything. It's, there's probably, I don't know, I don't even know who created him or anything like that, but he's definitely a character that Jim Starlin put his, you know,
his mark on,
his fingerprints all over, and kind of claimed it for his own.
Well, to jump ahead to the end of the book, Warlock dies at the end, right? Like,
you know, it's, does he? I don't even remember. Well, it's the kind of, I mean, characters, it doesn't even matter because characters die and come back all the time, you know.
I think, well, I mean, so
he does come back at some point.
Yeah, but I feel like this probably was the last Warlock story for a while. Like, it sort of wrapped up the character for a period of time.
Yeah, that's probably true.
You don't know if Jim Starlin created, like, Thanos?
He did create Thanos, because I remember people were saying that, you know, he should be getting a cut of the... He's one of many Marvel artists and writers who are kind of getting screwed over by all their ideas being turned into movies, and, you know, he's kind of a...
Oh, and, like, Thanos is in, like, in all these movies.
Yeah, exactly. So he's the new Marvel bad guy.
In terms of what you said about, like, you know, like, this being a cosmic story filtered through, like, men in tights type stuff, like, I think the character design of Thanos is, like, I feel like it's not great. Because he is, like, you know, basically, like, just a large man in tights. Like, he, like, represents more of, like, a conceptual, like, he's supposed to be more, like, just, like, an embodiment of, like, a kind of a power, like, a godlike evil thing, right?
So, yeah, what is he, a titan? Is that the...
Yeah, he's a titan, but, yeah, he's just got his spandex on and,
you know. Yeah, underpants on the outside.
I think his underpants look like they're made of metal.
that's gotta be uncomfortable.
He's got his blue tights and then a pair of metal tighty whities. You know, and then his...
I think I got my fascination with superheroes wearing their underpants on the outside from you. You did those paintings, a bunch of crotch shots of superheroes, right?
I did when I was in college. It
yeah,
to get just sort of a little something, to, yeah, a little commentary on the homoerotic sexuality of.
You know. Well, also, now I can't, whenever I see someone with their underpants like that, you can't help but think of them putting it on over their, like, okay, first they put their blue unitard on, and they pull up their little underpants on the outside, like, it's just hard to be dignified when you're imagining the...
You feel that sort of, if they have a scene in the Avengers Infinity War where they actually show Thanos in his bathroom.
Yeah, like washing his underpants in the sink.
Wasting it, because I think he's appeared in the movies, hasn't he, a little bit. They're kind of sticking with the same design on him, aren't they?
More or less. I don't remember if he has underpants or not, but...
I don't remember the underpants shot.
Yeah.
Well, Adam Warlock's the same way. He's got the unfortunate, like, you know... underpants with bare legs, which is, like, is that better?
Yeah, that's I mean, yeah, it's, like, basically, like, a woman's one-piece bathing suit is what a lot of these guys are wearing. You know, like Robin. Anyway.
It is like Robin, but, like, I guess it's kind of like a wrestler thing, too. He's got a big belt.
Yeah, he does have a big belt.
You know, but, yeah, he also, I guess, yeah, he has to put on his unitard at some point. There's a weird thing, like, the book collects, it seems like it collects a bunch of Strange Tales, and then it goes into a Warlock series, and then it ends with, like, an Avengers 2-in-1, like, annual.
Yeah, I guess basically wrapping up the story in other, yeah, Marvel 2-in-1 presents The Thing and Spider-Man.
Yes.
And then,
but there is a thing, like, in the...
Interestingly, neither of those characters is Adam Warlock. No. So it's weird that he doesn't even rank as a main character in his final appearance.
In the beginning, though, between, like, the maybe, like, the third and fourth chapter, mm-hmm. like, which are, like, issues, they actually do skip an issue. it looks like, because they go from, I think, Strange Tales 181.
Oh, yeah? I wonder what happened.
And, well, what happened in the in-between issue is that Adam Warlock got a new costume.
And but maybe it wasn't done by Jim Starlin? Is that why it's not in the book?
I'm not sure, but it starts off with them going, like, I have a new costume. But you don't see the adventure where he decides to change his outfit.
Yeah. And I think also one of the things that I find endearing about it is that Jim Starlin is kind of a... I don't know. I feel like the art in Marvel Comics used to be a lot more like... I don't know. He's a very idiosyncratic artist. Sometimes the anatomy is weird and a bit wonky, and he uses strange layouts. But I think that's kind of what I like about it, is it's almost like attainable. Like, I can draw as well as Jim Starlin can, I think.
Okay.
So I think that's kind of what I like about it, is that it's not like, I don't know.
Did he? You know,
and again, it's quirky and weird. So.
Well, he definitely, there's a quirky weirdness about it. Like, he does a lot of aliens that are like just weird looking. Like, I'm looking at one on page 58, and it's like, as an alien, he gets early on in the story, Adam Warlock gets captured on a, like, sort of like, I don't know if you saw this movie Star Wars, but there's a part where, R2-D2 gets, he gets caught in, like, a Jawa thing, and there's all these other, like, robots in there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, like, Adam Warlock is in, like, a thing like that, like, where he's been caught with, like, all these other, like, captured aliens, like, in a starship.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, yeah, there's one that's just, like, a giant pair of lips, and one's just a big eyeball, you know, and...
Yeah. Can I direct your attention to page 67?
Sure.
Now, as you mentioned, Warlock was captured and put in a pit with all other aliens. And at one point, they put a thing over his head, and it kind of like he lives in like a dream world, being controlled by his captors. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And this chapter is basically an attack on Marvel Comics at the time.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah, because all the characters are based on. Like the editor and like they want to turn Adam Warlock into a clown, and they're like, come on, you have to be like us, be a clown. And, you know, he's like, no, I'm not a clown. And that's basically Jim Starlin saying, like, Marvel Comics wants me to be this mainstream bland guy, but I don't want to do it. And then, you know, they're building this giant tower of trash, which is Jim Starlin's perception of Marvel Comics at the time. And, like, he finds diamonds in the trash, and they're like, oh, those are just these things. We don't know what they are. So that's supposed to be, like, the work of Jim Starlin, are these diamonds in a mountain of trash. Does that make sense? So the fact that this was published in a Marvel comic, like, it's like, when you read that, did you read the whole thing? Did
yes.
you, like, what did you think that
I
was
don't
about?
I believe it. They're building a giant tower of trash.
Yeah.
And this is what they've always done and always will do.
Yeah. It's
you know, I didn't pick up on that aspect of it. Now I'm looking at it, like, what's happening? He's got this, like, thing on his head, as you said, and he's sort of having these visions, and there are two people who look like his captors, and you're right, they have, like, faces that are far too specific.
Yeah, they definitely, you know, there's, like, guys with goatees and beards, which are, like, you know, like, and I think one of them is supposed to be, like, Len Wein.
Yeah.
And I forget who the other ones are supposed to be. Jan, that guy, Jan Hatroom is supposed to be John Romita.
Okay.
Who's the one saying, like, oh, you have to be, you know, he was the art director for Marvel at the time, so.
Do you recall from the Marvel Comics, that book, like, did he, Jim Starlin, have a bad relationship with Marvel?
I don't remember that specifically, but... I mean, he kept working with them, but, you know, he didn't have much choice back then. It was either Marvel or DC. It's not like you could really, you know, there weren't, like, a lot of, the Image wasn't even around at that time. So if you wanted to make a living as an artist, you pretty much had to go to Marvel or DC. But he's still around. I don't know if he's still working or not, but.
Reading the book, it's hard for me, like, as a Marvel Comics reader to not, it's sort of a little hard for me to shake off. Getting a little more comfortable when you do get to, like, the regular, like, Marvel Universe stuff.
Yeah.
Like, because I'm... Like, I didn't really know who Warlock was, and I saw Guardians of the Galaxy, and I'm like, is this, like, Guardians of the Galaxy? Like, is this, like, those characters? And not really. Like, there's a... Like, I think there's a character called Gamora, who I think is in that movie.
Well, maybe that's the one that Jim Starlin... Maybe that's the one that Jim Starlin created, that...
I think that person seems like she's invented in the story, and she's like the daughter of Thanos.
Yeah, Thanos does seem... Well, I'm not sure. You're near a computer, right? Well, anyway, I'm sure someone can look this up. It doesn't matter.
What were you going to say? Like, who created...
Oh, so they just Google who created... who created Thanos.
I feel like he may have been around earlier because, like, the comic does sort of, like, refer to, like, you know, previous, like, Avengers battles.
Yeah.
But I was going to say, is that part of me does sort of feel a little more comfortable when like, the Avengers show up.
It just turns into a more straightforward, like, people punching to Thanos.
Like, I know what's going on here. I know.
Yeah.
I know where we're at. Where it's, like, the other stuff, like, it's, because there's a lot of, like, Adam Warlock being tortured, like, mentally, like, very, yeah. Like, wrought, like, I'm, you know.
Exiled to weird dimensions and trapped in his own psyche and things like that.
Yeah, and a lot of, like, existential, like, monologuing, which I gotta admit, that part is was a little tough for me. Like, because it also repeats a lot, like, you know, as the issues, you know, every issue sort of has to do that thing where it's kind of recover the same ground.
Yeah,
you
know, right.
Catch you up. Like, you didn't mind any of that stuff when you were...
Well, I'm sure, I can't claim to have read, I'm sure once I saw you started monologuing, I'm sure I was like, okay, I can see what's, you know, and mentally fast forwarding through the, you know, scrubbing through the panels till I could see that it was new stuff. I'm not going to pretend I read every word of this book. It's madness. It's impossible.
you like his art, you say? Go ahead.
Well, I was thinking, but that was back in the day where people didn't really do, like, self-contained, you know, nowadays everyone thinks with the graphic novel, you know, the collection in mind, I imagine, but, you know, it's a different world back then. You were just trying to put boards in bags, comics in bags of boards.
Maybe not even then, maybe not in the 70s with the...
Oh, that's true, yeah, the direct market hadn't even really been created yet, so...
Now, there's a whole, So probably one of the more interesting aspects of the story is that, like, actually plot-wise, it's Adam Warlock discovers this future version of him with a big afro.
Yeah.
And they do a sort of a fun thing in order, like, basically to defeat that future version of himself, he travels to his own future and kills himself, like, a few months.
Yeah, something like that.
Like, that was fun, but there's a whole aspect, like, there's a whole chapter in here with, like, the in-betweener.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, like, is that, like, do you know, like, is this, like, that's a Ditko character, right?
You know, I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
It doesn't, it seems like it could be, although I don't know, Ditko generally doesn't like gray areas, so he would want something to be either black or white, not black and white.
Well, I think that's the idea of the in-betweener. We're going to be driving some, like, probably about 6 listeners of the show are going to be crazy because some people love Ditko, and I know that one of these chapters was dedicated to Steve Ditko, but the character would make sense to me that, like, he's a, you know, he's just, he only deals in extremes, like, extreme concepts.
That's true.
You know, good and bad, and, you know, there is no gray in the middle.
Yeah, I'm going to look it up right now.
You can go ahead and do that, that's fine.
Yeah, you
tell
keep talking.
Tell me
keep
who invented Gamora. Did Jim Starlin invent Gamora?
Gamora is definitely Jim Starlin.
Okay, and then in-betweener was created by Steve Ditko?
Hold on, I'm looking up Thanos first.
Okay. This is riveting, riveting audio.
Thanos, the headline is Thanos, Jim Starlin created Thanos.
And
might be harder to find the in-betweener.
All right, I'll quickly do Adam Warlock.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, that's
in-betweener.
Maybe I should write down the timestamp because I might want to edit a little bit of this.
Really? You don't want to keep the two guys Googling stuff for 5
just
minutes?
Just the part where it goes quiet. I might have to, we go, the sound of you go, in-betweener, tap, 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 tap.
Well, his first appearance was in Warlock number 10, so I'm going to guess he was created by Jim Starlin.
The in-betweener.
It's sad that the Marvel Wiki does not list the creator of the book, of the character.
So the in-betweener's first appearance was in...
In Warlock number 10. So it's probably in this book.
Oh, okay. Is that the... Oh, okay. So maybe it was just a shout-out to Steve Ditko then. Like, maybe they thought it was a Ditko-esque character.
Yeah, I could see that.
He's one that, like... Yeah, like, he's one that I feel like a lot of people in the comics industry... I have this a lot where, like... I feel there's a lot of love for certain creators who sort of, like, have never been, like, my guys. And I feel like you have to sort of get to you at a certain, like, the right time, probably.
You had to be there, man.
I guess so. Like, Steve Ditko's one, and Jack Kirby, frankly, is one, like, has never quite really kind of, Like, I'm too old to, like, read the stories.
Too old.
Mm-hmm. But, like, I look at the artwork, and I love Jack Kirby work. But it just wasn't, like, that wasn't, like, the work when I was, like, reading comics as a younger person. Like,
I was
in the John Byrne era.
I did not care for Jack Kirby when I was younger, you know, reading 80s Marvel, because it just seemed too almost stylized. It's weird. I think when you're younger, people tend to like realistic art.
Yeah.
And, you know, they want to be as realistic as possible. And then I think it's only when you get older that you can kind of appreciate, when I got older, I appreciated Kirby just because it's such a unique, you know, it's visually unique. And I've been reading actually some of his New Gods stuff.
Okay.
And I say reading in air quotes because it's very difficult to read.
Well, that's what I was getting.
He's not a great writer in terms of like, okay, here's a character with a consistent plot and motivations from scene to scene. Like, he just keeps, like, there's thousands of characters introduced, and that's why I think him and Stan Lee were really a good pair, because, you know, they kind of balanced each other out in terms of that stuff. But yeah. You know, it's like the Beatles. Like, they did their best work when they were together, and they kind of counteracted each other's weaknesses and so on.
Like, they're reeled in some of their tendencies.
Yeah. But I can enjoy reading The New Gods, but I have to go into it knowing, like, this is not a story in the conventional sense. It's almost like a dream or something. Everything has kind of like a weird dream logic to it. So,
Speaking of characters sort of wandering around with, like, no motivation, or, like, inconsistent motivation.
Yeah, and now we're talking about my book again?
I feel like there's a little aspect of this in Warlock, where, like, it's not totally clear exactly who... Like, sometimes, like, take the character of Pip the Troll.
Yeah.
Who, my favorite thing about him is that the trolls have, it looks like their feet become, like, woolly slippers.
Yeah, they're not quite hooves, and they're not quite feet. They're just like brown feet that I guess are, it's weird.
Yes, it's like he's got slippers attached to his body. Like, he's just like a comfy pair of, like, house slippers.
And he's also going around in underpants all the time.
Yeah, he just wears, like, a raggedy loincloth.
Yeah, it's a strange, he's kind of like a Warlock's kind of like a musing sidekick or something.
Well, that's what I was going to get at. You feel like he's supposed to be.
Yeah.
The only reason you feel that is because they keep saying, oh, he's your debaucherous, like, wacky sidekick. But at no point is he ever sort of given enough characterization that you sort of, like, you know, see him in that light from anything he actually does, you know.
Well, the other way you can tell is that he always has a cigar in the side of his mouth. So that's like
shorthand for...
Yeah, he's kind of, you know, like the thing always smoked a cigar. It's like that kind of, it's like a way of conveying like a kind of like, I don't know, not a good time Charlie exactly, but like a, like a wise guy.
Yeah, I guess it's sort of a wise guy thing, but yeah, like there's a definite weakness in this, in the writing.
Yeah, well, he's not good at, like, humor, Joe Starlin. That's not his thing. Big cosmic, like, weirdness is his thing. Like, it's like George Lucas. Just don't try to do funny. Stick to the stuff you're good at.
I like Jim Starlin, I feel, probably employed, maybe not that much, but definitely in some of these things, he probably used the toothbrush method of making stars.
Oh, yeah? Are they all clumped together like that?
No, you ever seen that thing, like, you ever did that? I used to do this when I was, like, in high school. Like, I love to, like, you know, to make blood splatters by, like, using a toothbrush to make a spray. I never figured
out a good way to do that with comics, because how do you stop it from going the places you don't... Like, how do you make the spatter not go all over the word balloons and the, like, where you don't want it to go? Like, now you can just do all that with Photoshop, but...
I guess you gotta put tape down, like masking tape and stuff like that.
Ugh. What, on the original pages?
I don't know. I guess because I'm looking through this now, like, and I know that, like, there's, like, the backgrounds are constantly, like, starscapes.
Yeah.
But maybe they're not, like, done in the toothbrush splatter. It's more like blobs. Like.
Yeah. I wonder if the stars are created, like, does he fill it in black and then take white out and go over it, or because some of them definitely look like they were done, you know, like. he drew all circles and then filled in the blacks around it. But yeah, it's probably a combination.
This is as a part of the story I got a little confused about. At one point,
just one. This is like crazy.
Well, Warlock is supposed to be from Earth, and they have a moment where like he travels back to Earth, but because he's the explanation given is because he's been in a part of the universe that is expanding.
Oh, he's like gigantic.
But he is like, you know, like 50 times the size of the planet Earth because he's been expanding more quickly than Earth.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I missed it, but then like a chapter or two later, he's just on Earth and he's fine.
Yeah, I do remember the one part where he was like gigantic, and then I was wondering, was that supposed to be literal or like metaphorically he's too big for Earth now? And then, like you said, they just kind of, maybe it happened maybe that was handled in when he appeared in, Nova number 7. Maybe they solved that problem. They just didn't include it in the story.
Yeah, I wonder, like, I guess that's just like the way of telling stories, like it's so sort of like difficult, right? Like it's like everything's jumping around. Like, so yeah, like it ends, there's a Warlock issue and he's too big to go to Earth. And then the next issue is King Size Avengers like annual.
Yeah.
And that one, basically, yeah, he just shows up at Avengers Mansion.
Maybe he found, yeah, because I remember thinking like, is this a different Earth that he's gone to where, I don't know.
Giant Who Earth? Knows?
Yeah. You just got to sort of take it as it comes.
I love an Avengers Mansion. I don't know if they still do this sort of thing, but like in the beginning, like the Avengers are just hanging out in Avengers Mansion. Mm-hmm. And again, with the costumes, they're just all standing around in their costumes.
I remember watching the Avengers cartoon series at one point. I watched the first season and that was actually pretty enjoyable. And then there's a scene where they go, the Fantastic Four and like Spider-Man go to the Avengers Mansion to play poker. And again, like you said, they're all wearing their costumes. Like Iron Man's wearing his helmet and suit to play poker. Like what the? I guess these guys just really love wearing their superhero costumes.
Yeah, like I guess in the movies nowadays they do actually have them disrobe for those casual moments where they're hanging out, right?
Right. Well, any excuse for like. Yeah, disrobe.
I guess that's true. An excuse to just not have to do a special effects shot.
Yeah, and it's almost like in the Spider-Man movies, there always has to be a scene where Tobey Maguire or whatever is like pulling. They always have to have their faces exposed as much as possible, because you know I'm not going to pay Morton Downey Jr. $20 million to show up in this and then have him just played by a CGI robot the whole time.
Yeah.
So. One thing about Warlock and the New Gods thing is it's influenced the next book I'm working on, which is going to be a kind of cosmic space saga thing.
Okay.
Like the fact that Warlock isn't really tied to Earth at all, he just kind of goes around having crazy adventures. I kind of like that aspect of it where you don't really need to explain a lot of stuff, or at least it's... I don't know. But I think basically I'm just sick of doing stories about people sitting around talking about their feelings. So
okay. So this is going to be like a space thing? Like when did you read this book? Like what prompted you to pick it up?
I don't even recall. I think I just heard that it was weird and kind of unlike I maybe reading that Steve, maybe reading the How book made me more curious about reading old Marvel comics. And I used to buy those essentials, but I found I missed color with superhero stories. You know what I mean?
Okay.
You know those essentials, those like $20 paperbacks?
And they make them cheap so you could read them.
Yeah, but I think superhero comics particularly are well suited to color, and also the art was designed to be colored. So some people, you know, like they ink in such a way where, you know, like Gene Colan is a person where it doesn't need to be in color because he has such heavy blacks and whites, but other stuff I think really, like I don't think this Warlock would hold up if it was in black and white.
Okay. So
as little as it holds up now, I think it would hold up even less if it was in
I'm confused now, because you sort of said like you love it, but do you love it, or is there things about it you love?
I guess there's things about it I love. Like I said, it's not like I read this whole thing tip to tail and reread it because it had some deeper significance. It's almost just like a weird not quite outsider art, but on that almost, it's like the Marvel version of outsider art.
Yeah.
Like a unique voice getting through this kind of weird corporate comic. So it's almost like a curiosity in that sense.
Yeah. I like it in that sense too. But yeah, like it was, it's a lot of words in this comic.
Yes, this is true.
Like, I don't know if this is the way Marvel comics are done or if this is a Jim Starlin thing, but like, you know, like every speech bubble is full and like, you know, so like it takes a long time to actually read, you know, like, it doesn't, you know, you don't fly through it. Like it's slow, you know, like if you're actually reading it, so you find yourself skimming, you know?
Yeah. And also, yeah, you know, I basically, if I, there was big chunks or chunks where I would skim. And then if I, the good thing is, you know, that eventually someone was, if you find yourself confused because of the way Marvel comics were structured at the time, someone is going to come along and have a scene of exposition telling you what's going on. You know,
it's okay. Someone's going to repeat.
Yeah.
This thing has been said many times, you know, already in the story. We'll get that, you know, they'll make it clear.
Yeah. Marvel comics at the time were a lot like those previously on Warlock, except those things were in the story so that, you know, you could pay attention to
previously
it, so.
On Warlock, let's talk for a page and a half and tell you everything.
Yeah.
In very, very tightly, you know, packed caption boxes and word balloons.
Yeah, so how much of that is ironic liking and how much of that is sincere liking, that I'll leave that to the listener to decide.
Well, that's the thing. So I didn't know, like, coming in, I'm like, does Alex, like, love this as a kid? Like, is... like, because I don't know what's going on, like, you know, like, in terms of, like, how it fits into, like, the Marvel Universe, as I said.
Yeah.
Like, I thought he was Quasar or something. He's not. He's not.
Wait, what?
I thought the character of Adam Warlock was Quasar.
I could see that. They both have a similar kind of, I don't know, tailor?
You know, or, yeah, and I thought maybe it also, like, related to the guy from Guardians of the Galaxy. So, you know, it took me a while to, like, figure out what was, you know, exactly what I was reading.
Mm-hmm.
I read that, like, some people saw it as, like, a Jesus-type character. Like, Warlock's, like, a Jesus-type guy.
Well, I think at one point he does die and come back. Well, like a lot of Marvel, like a lot of superheroes, he does die and come back to life at some point.
Oh, that's true. He dies right at the end, and he comes back to stop Thanos right at the end.
Yeah. Thanos is a weird character. Like, he worships, or he's in love with death. Is that his whole thing?
Yeah, he's in love with death, the concept of death.
But, like he wants to, like, make sweet love to death. Like, death appears to him as, like, a lady, and he's all like, oh, death, I love you, I would do anything for you. I don't get that. It's the same with, like, Satanists. Like, what's the end game of a Satanist? Oh, I worship Satan so that when I die, I can go to hell?
You're asking what his motivation is? Or, like, why, what he's actually hoping, his objective?
Why would Thanos be in love with death?
I don't know, that's what I'm saying. Like, Thanos strikes me as more, like, an abstract concept.
Uh-huh.
So once again, it's come back to the metal underwear.
Oh.
And his yellow boots and his sort of ruins.
Yeah.
Because I think, I'm looking at a panel here, like, at the end, Adam Warlock dies and he goes inside to his soul gem.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, basically, like, heaven. Like, he finds all his friends there. And one of the things I actually did like about the story was throughout it, he has a soul gem attached to his forehead, and he can kill his enemies using it, but he feels terrible for doing it because he basically feels like, you know, he's stealing their souls.
He's like a vampire.
Yeah, but like they had an aspect of it like where he seemed to like actually be like torn up about that kind of thing.
Yeah,
which you know, I could see like many characters, you know, basic, you know, more like a less complex character, like not really giving it a second thought. You know.
Yeah, there's a certain morality behind him, especially like, it.
Yeah, especially like some of like the henchmen that he kills off, like in a normal adventure story would like are just like cannon fodder, right?
Yeah, no one really. They're just kind of like, yeah, exactly.
But he feels bad about it, and like, and it reminded me a little bit of you saw that Mad Max
Road Fury,
yeah, where there's the guy in it who, I can't remember what they're called, but like the wild boy kind of thing who ties Mad Max to the front of the car in the beginning.
Yeah.
And you think gets killed off like pretty quickly, but then sort of like is still alive and just sort of keeps hanging around. And as I'm watching the movie, like at first you just sort of feel like that's just like cannon fodder, like he's just going to be gone. But then eventually like actually like becomes a character. like on one of the better characters. And that's not what happens in Adam Warlock, but some of these cannon fodder people, like Adam, they do show up in the little heaven. I like that, like, you know, the
Well, I think that's also kind of what I liked about it. I mean, as clunky as it can be, I mean, Jim Starlin is at least trying to wrestle with some kind of ideas.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is necessarily, you know, that common in, at least, in superhero experience, the superhero comics to my experience. I realize part of the problem is whenever I'm thinking of superheroes, sometimes I'll think, like, you know what would be a good superhero story? This. And then I'll tell, like, Josh Flanagan, he'll be like, yeah, they did that, like, 25 years ago. Because I've not read superhero comics, like, regularly for, like, 30 years. So, for all I know, like, superhero comics are generally very different than I'm imagining them being. But
you basically left the Marvel Universe around the same time when Howard the Duck was the most popular character in all of Marvel. You're like, have they done anything since?
Yeah, they should get a band of mutants together. That would be cool.
Oh, that would be cool. Like outsiders, mutants.
Oh, yeah, because it would be like a metaphor for like all sorts of persecuted minorities.
Yes, persecuted minorities with the power to kill you with their eyesight lasers.
Yeah.
You know, like
tales old as time. Yeah, exactly. And of course, now those same self... anyway, I was going to start ranting and raving about homophobic X-Men fans, but who cares?
Well, did you have anything else to add about Warlock?
No, not really. That's my comics reading has become very erratic lately. Again, I kind of feel like I'm really out of touch with everything that's going on. So, you know, when I was like, oh, what have I read recently that I could talk about, rather than like, oh, Cerebus, you know?
So, yeah, I wasn't gonna read all of Cerebus.
I figured Jim Starlin was as close as they could get to making you read Cerebus. So
yeah, so like the comic show, the two free Fantagraphics books I'll get for this podcast, I'm not gonna read 7,000 pages of Cerebus. Well, I did not love this book, but I did like that it was something I had never seen before, and
it's unique.
I never tried reading before.
Well, I appreciate you plunking down the money to buy it, because it's not a cheap book. That's the problem with those color books, is that they're...
That's all right. I like to... Yeah. All right, cool.
That's it? We're all done?
Yeah, I guess so.
All right.
All right.
That was fun.
So, thank you, Alex, and everyone go check out your new book about how expanding universe, right? It's about how areas of the universe, some of them expand faster than others, so if you travel to them, you become a giant. So you can't come back to Earth.
Yeah, that's kind of where I got the idea for it. I was like, that's it.
That's the plot of your new book, right? It's about I can't go back to Earth. I'm bigger than Earth.
Inspired by the works of Jim Starlin. So, and my book, I realize, is very talky as well. Maybe I was influenced by Jim Starlin more than I let on.
Now, you know how to... And most cartoonists these days, this is like a thing of the 70s, I think, like in these Marvel comics, you know, where they're just trying to fit in all this exposition.
Uh-huh.
So they're really doing that thing where they're not showing much, they're telling everything, you know, except for the fights. So, like, you can have a book that's dense, like, it just, because it also depends on what those words are. Like, you know, what's hard about this is a lot of words and it's all very dull.
Yeah, because a lot of it is just kind of there's a lot of, like,
it's just a lot of
like,
it's just, if your book ends up being, you know, like these guys sitting around like explaining at length you know who they are and how they feel and repeating it again 10 pages later.
Yeah, that's hopefully it will not be like that, but well, I was actually thinking, I know we're wrapping up, but I was considering doing my next book Marvel style.
Okay.
In that I would pencil it all out before I started writing the dialogue. You know what I mean?
So
the dialogue would have to fit into, you almost couldn't do those huge things where you have a lot of talky scenes, because I wouldn't want to draw page after page of just people talking to each other. So if I know, okay, there has to be a scene where this is explained, I would have to be kept short, because I wouldn't want to, you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, but what do you think makes you want to do that?
I think, well, here's what it is. I think generally my books you could divide my brain into two parts, the writer part of my brain and the artist part of my brain. And generally, the writer part of my brain is in charge.
Okay.
If the writer's like, well, there has to be a scene between the father and the daughter where they talk about the relationship, the artist part's like, ugh, that means it's going to be a lot of pages of just two characters talking to each other for page after page. How do you make that visually interesting? How do you, you know, what, if the writer part of my brain is in charge, the artist part of my brain is in charge, they'd be like, okay, you have two pages to have them talk about the relationship and that's it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And you just have to economize, keep it short. And so,
so you're saying you're just trying to make more of an effort to kind of like, force yourself to sort of be more efficient?
Well, not necessarily. Well, just to sort of make the stuff more fun to draw. Cause I feel like if it's more fun to draw, it will go quicker. I don't want to have another 7 years in between books. I want it to come out. You know, I feel like both of us have probably said this frequently. Like when you finish a book, you're like, okay, I want the next one to go much faster than that. I don't want to spend years on one book. I want it to come out, you know, brisk and spontaneous. And I feel like by making it fun to draw, that's sort of a way to force that to happen. Like when I did that Little Regents book, which had no dialogue, that was so much fun to do because I, you know, it was just purely drawing with very little writing. So sort of compromise.
And like pleasurable things to draw.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm trying to go more in that direction, but the trick is how do I still give it that Alex Robinson feeling while not letting the writer drive.
I do like the idea of the two sides of your brain arguing, because I'm picturing the cover of Rush's Hemispheres album.
I don't know that one.
Oh, well, it's two sides of the brain. There's a naked man on the artist side, and a man in a business suit on the other side.
Oh, there you go. The classic.
So, yeah, you're the man, you're the writer in his business suit. Go, come on now, let's...
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I found that when I draw something just for its own sake, like if I'm drawing like a pinup or just like a one-shot drawing, I really enjoy doing it. I really enjoy drawing because you also know you don't have to draw that character over and over and over again. That's an overlooked superpower needed to do comics, is the idea that you're willing to say, okay, I'm going to draw this character probably 1,000 times. If it's like the main character over a 300-page book, you know, you're literally drawing one character over 1,000 times. So
yeah.
You know.
I was having a problem recently. Not a problem, but, you know, I sort of wrapping up on, like, the comic that I'd been doing, which was a lot of, like, short internet things. And I had this idea for, like, a new story, like, to, like, maybe do a longer, like, fiction piece.
Yeah.
And the whole time I was working on my last thing, I'm like, next time I want to, like, really, like, just sort of, like, change up my visual style.
Yeah. You always do that.
But I want to break out of, like, you know, I'm so sick of, like, the way I draw.
Yeah. Like Billy Joel.
What, is that what he likes to do?
Well, Billy Joel quit doing music because he says, I like writing music, but I'm so sick of Billy Joel's voice.
Okay, so that's when he just went to doing classical music?
Yeah, because he's like, I'm sick of hearing myself sing, I want to just do something different. So yeah, you're so like Billy Joel.
I'm like Billy Joel in 1998.
Yeah. You're the entertainer.
I'm the entertainer. But what I was going to get at is that, like, it's really very hard. Like, I read other comics, and I'm like, I love the way that, like, the visual style of this person is, like, you know, the way this comic is drawn. Like, I read that Arsène Schrouin, right? Did you read that?
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen it? Like,
it doesn't sound familiar based on the name, but I've never heard it. Maybe I've seen it and just never spoken it. You know what I mean?
What's that? There's a ton of other cartoonists. So, like, you know, like, I'm just like, I just love the, you know, the way that they're putting together pages, and like, and I'm just so tired of the way, like, everything looks like I drew it. Like,
yeah.
When I'm making things, but then I start new things. It's really hard to shake off, like, who you are, you know.
Yeah, that's also something I've been, I similarly have been wrestling with.
But I heard a thing recently. It was a Dylan Horrocks talking on a podcast saying that, you know, you have to think of it as your voice.
Yeah.
Like if you're a singer, like, that's the voice you have.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're an artist, that's just the way. Like, you can try to, like, fiddle around the edges. Like what you're doing, right? Like, you're going to try to think about content.
Yeah.
That will give you pleasure. But, like, you're not a, you know, you're not actually going to be able to, like, completely undo the way that you make, you know, comics and the way you, like, what you, the way you draw.
Yeah, you can change it to some degree, but not you. It's very difficult to do a kind of complete overhaul of your methods.
Yeah, although I really would like that. I would like to not have to make any more Mike Dawson comics.
Well, what
get out of this.
What do, like, what did you have in mind? Like, what?
How, I just would... wanted to, like, I just wanted to, like, just like try to, and I'll still try, but
Well, it's funny because I look at like Scott Pilgrim, and I feel like he's the Brian Lee O'Malley. That's his name, mm-hmm. right? I feel like he's had a huge influence on a certain generation of cartoonists. And when I look at it, I'm like, that looks like so much fun to do. Mm-hmm. Like, I would love to be able to draw like that, that spontaneous, and not get bogged down with needly cross-hatching and stuff. But whenever I try to do spontaneous and fun like that, it just looks simple and sloppy. You know what I mean? As opposed to intricately inked and sloppy. So it is kind of coming to terms with
really
the fact.
I fix that with some cross hatching.
Yeah. It really comes down to, like you said, just kind of accepting, like, well, this is who I am. This is, I can change a bit. And, like, to use the voice analogy, someone like Chris Ware clearly has a real, like, he has a wide range of, he can do a bunch of different styles and if he wanted to, you know, and he does, but, I don't think most people have that range.
Whereas you feel like you just have the Alex Robinson falsetto?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like
that's what you're singing in all the time.
No, I'm like if you were a singer, who would your style be? That's the question.
Like,
I'm like a Jackson Brown. Like, he doesn't have a really wide range. He has his fans, but, you know, it's he's not that strong of a singer in terms of what he can do with his voice.
Okay.
So who would you say you are?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure. I didn't have to think about that.
Well, we already established you're Billy Joel.
I'm Billy Joel. I'm the Billy Joel of comics.
Yeah.
Oh. Now, I like me some Joel.
Can I tell you something funny? There's a podcast. Did we talk about this already? Anyway, this might not be for the TCJ Talkies, but where somebody goes through... We Didn't Start the Fire, and they devote one episode to each mentioned. Okay, did we talk about that already?
You told me about it, yeah.
Okay, we're good. Then you got this out. I was just gonna talk about that. But you're the Billy Joel of comics.
That's okay, because at the end of my career, I get to just take a helicopter over to SPX.
He's very successful.
Just show up and sell my comics, and he helicopters straight out of there. Out of Shea Stadium, you know, right after just doing all my hits. So I'm back home. I'm home by midnight.
Yeah. It's your life.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean.
You don't like being the Billy Joel of comics?
I am the Billy Joel of comics. I'm so sort of like middle brow.
Yeah, exactly.
Not talented. Just sort of not really, you know.
That's not true. He's had plenty of
critical darling.
Billy G's not a critical darling, but he's had plenty of hits.
I haven't had any hits. That's the other thing. I'm Cold Spring Harbor Billy Joel. I'm waiting for my piano man to come around.
Right.
Whereas, I'm not sure. Jackson Brown's what his songs? Which,
Lawyers in Love. Somebody's Baby. She's got to be somebody's baby.
Oh, that sounds like an Alex Robinson comic.
The same. There you go.
I'm like, oh, is that...
sensitive. Dull.
I literally don't know either of those songs. I think I know any Jackson Brown songs.
You would totally know it if you heard it. It's
I'm thinking of the Cats in the Cradle guy when you're
Harry Chapin. Did you see Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
Is Jackson Brown the one who became
No, that's Cat Stevens.
Okay.
Cat Stevens became Yusuf Islam.
Okay, so you're not the Cat Stevens of comics, you're the Jackson Brown.
No, he's too controversial, Cat Stevens.
Okay.
James Taylor? No, he's too wimpy.
You're a little edgier than James Taylor?
I'm a little edgier. I'm like an edgy James Taylor.
Like a Jackson Brown.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Perfect.
But it was just a little thing. Dylan, he says smart things all the time.
Wait, you mean Dylan Horrocks or Bob Dylan?
Dylan Horrocks says smart things all the time, and that was one that just sort of is a bit comforting to think that way. Like, I'm not going to be sort of able to change my whole way of making marks, you know. It's like just the same way I can't have a better voice come out of my throat, you know.
Right.
So that was because I actually was getting into a bit of a block because I wanted to start this new thing and it was nothing looked good. You know, so then sort of like be like, you know what, I'll just do the thing I've been working on, like that I've been like getting better at, you know, which is just the thing that I do.
You're going to be the best Mike Dawson you can be.
The best Joel. I'm going to write my The Stranger.
You never know. Your Uptown Girl might be right around the corner.
There he is. Hey, buddy, how was your weekend? Yeah, mine was too short.